Australia, and he's having a great time. We just felt last week it was the right thing, and I want to thank those people who were part of helping us make that decision. Actually, there are a few words of confirmation that we were looking for that Sunday, because so much happened last week, and we were just umming and ahhing about what would be the right thing to do. And there are some really special people here who just acted on what God was asking them to say. And as a result of that, at 10 p.m. Sunday night, we booked a flight. At 9 a.m., Pete left home to go to Heathrow, and he landed the night before the celebration service and went straight there the next day. And I know that Bev was just so bowled over to see him there. He got the opportunity to share a few words on behalf of Skylark Church and on behalf of our network. And I'm so glad that we were represented there. So he's having a wonderful time. He's been sightseeing. I see the occasional picture of him pop up on my WhatsApp outside Sydney Opera House or wherever he may be. He's been drinking a lot of coffee. And I believe that he's currently at a service in Hillsong, or maybe that will have just finished now. So how great. Do you reckon I'm due a spa weekend when he gets back? Yeah, I reckon so. Leading a church and parenting and holding the home together has definitely been a bit more of a challenge, but I'm still standing. Yeah? And a massive shout out to all our wonderful single mums here. You guys are incredible. I've only got one, and I found it really hard this week. So I just want to say you're so loved, and you are amazing. Amazing, amazing. So creating culture, we're drawing this theme to a close, but as you know, we had three really clear elements to our vision moving forward. And the first was rebuilding ruins, and we spent time talking about what does it look like to be somebody that sees the ruins in another person's life, or in a city, or in a town, or in a situation, and who partners with God to say, that's not okay, not on my watch. I want to be part of the solution. I want to be part of seeing ruins rebuild and kingdom built into the lives of individuals and into nations. And then we moved on to look at being bridge builders. What does it look like to build bridges into our community, into our workplace, into our family? And we talked about how we bridge that divide. And it's amazing to see all the different ways as a church that we're beginning to do that. As Paul Lehman and Stu and others are going weekly into Duke's Orchard and building bridges into the lives of elderly residents there, restoring dignity, just serving them and loving them and building relationship. Little Ones, which we heard about this morning, is building bridges into lives of mums and dads and toddlers week upon week. And it is just buzzing. It has been such an incredibly strong start. And we have seen so many people come through and be blessed as a result of that. I could keep going, but we may not get to my message, which wouldn't be a good thing. So today I want to look at creating a culture of influence. And I'm hoping, we've had a few technical issues, so the guys are trying really hard to get my slides up at the back there. But if they're not there, we'll just wing it. It will be fine. I want to start by throwing out a question. And I want you to discuss this with the people around you this morning. My question is this. Which person or people would you say to date have had the greatest influence on your life? Discuss. Okay, I reckon some of you are off topic already. There's a lot of talking happening here. Brilliant. Now, I would now like you to raise your hand if the answer you gave to that question also happens to be someone that you have close relationship with, okay? Just raise your hand if that's the case. And I think that we can see that that is the vast majority of people in the room. You see, when we think about influence, I think often we think about the people in our culture who have the most airtime. So we might think about celebrities. We might think about people like Bill and Melinda Gates or Mark Zuckerberg. We might think about Donald Trump, Theresa May, politicians. We might think about Pope Francis or the Archbishop of Canterbury. We think about those kind of people that we see in the public eye, the type of people that are broadcast and get airtime over our media, the kind of people who maybe are helping humanity to be better or making improvements or at least rolling up their sleeves and giving it a go. And that's fantastic. But I want to put to you this morning that the reason that none of us put our hand up to say, or few of us put our hand up to say, that it was not somebody we had close relationship with, is because kingdom influence looks different. You see, kingdom influence is not about platforms. Kingdom influence is not about media time or celebrity or fame. Kingdom influence hinges on one very small thing, and that is relationship. The level to which we are prepared to invest into relationship is the level to which we will be able to influence others for the culture of the kingdom. And you see, influence, when you look it up in the dictionary, is simply this. It's the capacity to have an effect on the character, the development, or the behavior of someone. The capacity to have an effect on the character, the development, or the behavior of someone. I think we need to change our mindset when it comes to thinking about influence, because we have this global or mass mindset. We think that creating a culture of influence starts with the world. But you see, in kingdom terms, having an influence starts with the one. It doesn't start with the world. It starts with the one. And why is that good news? Well, it's great news because it means that we can all be influencers. You see, if you're waiting to have a moment where you're elevated to a platform or where all of a sudden there's an opportunity to share with a whole bunch of people, you're missing the point. We can all start to have an influence where we are because everybody knows someone. And if you know one person, and if you are in relationship with one other person, then you have the opportunity to be an influencer for Jesus. But it has to start with relationship. Why are we so upset about losing Paul Jevons and Pauline Dale and Rick Murrell? I'll tell you why. It's because those were people who personally took time to invest into others. And each of us can think, or for those of us who knew them, we can think of moments where they sat down and took the time to look beyond our veneer and to actually touch the core of who we are. That's influence, my friends. And yes, some of them may have gone on to have more platform time and airtime, but those aren't the things that we love and remember them for. We remember them for the time that they took to have a coffee with us, or to come to our house for dinner, or to serve the teas and coffees, or to greet us with a warm hug or a handshake. That is influence. It starts with relationship. And today I want to talk about four hallmarks of an influencer. Four hallmarks of an influencer. And I'm going to look at the relationship between Moses and Joshua in that transition point between the two of them. And it's interesting timing to be looking at that. But I guess the reason I'm doing it is because, church, there is a legacy that's been left to us by these great men and women of God. And it's our time now to pick up that legacy and start creating one for another person. Just as Joshua had to succeed from Moses. Let's turn in our Bibles to Numbers 27, and we're going to read from verse 12, okay? So Numbers 27, we're going to read from verse 12. And over the course of these four hallmarks, we're going to dip in and out of Numbers and we're going to dip in and out of Exodus. So just be at the ready. We there? With me? I can't hear you. Oh, good. Great. Okay. Then the Lord said to Moses, go up this mountain in the Abarim range and see the land I've given the Israelites. After you have seen it, you too will be gathered to your people as your brother Aaron was. For when the community rebelled at the waters in the desert of Zin, both of you disobeyed my command to honor me as holy before their eyes. These were the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the desert of Zin. Moses said to the Lord, may the Lord, the God who gives breath to all living things, appoint someone over this community to go out and come in before them, one who will lead them out and bring them in, so the Lord's people will not be like sheep without a shepherd. So the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom is the spirit of leadership, and lay your hand on him. Have him stand before Eleazar, the priest, and the entire assembly, and commission him in their presence. Give him some of your authority, so the whole Israelite community will obey him. He is to stand before Eleazar, the priest, who will obtain decisions for him by inquiring of the Urim before the Lord. At his command, he and the entire community of the Israelites will go out, and at his command they will come in. Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He took Joshua and had him stand before Eleazar the priest and the whole assembly. Then he laid his hands on him and commissioned him as the Lord instructed through Moses. I always find this passage such a poignant and bittersweet passage to read. You see, here's Moses, and just imagine this. He's had a tough gig. From the moment he was called at the burning bush, first of all, he has to go to Pharaoh umpteen times and to have the strength to go and ask and ask and ask again on behalf of his people that Pharaoh would let them go and set them free from captivity. And then when that finally happens and he sees God do unprecedented things, he's left with a bunch of whingy, grumbly, moany people wandering about the wilderness for 40 years. Can you imagine that? He had such a hard job as a leader. I feel for the guy. And what was his motivation? It was the promise that one day he would see those people enter into the promised land. That was the vision. That's the thing he was longing for. It's the thing that got him out of bed in the morning. It's the thing that caused him time and time again to say, okay, God, this is really tough. These people are driving me nuts, but I'll go again. And so imagine standing on the precipice of that moment, standing with the Lord as he shows you this land flowing with milk and honey that he had promised. And then he says, but it's not you. It's not you, Moses. You're not going to be the one to take these people in. Can you imagine that? It must have been so gut-wrenchingly, heartbreakingly difficult for him to finally understand that even though the people would enter in, he wasn't going to be there. In fact, he was about to die. So how is it then that at that stage of bitter personal disappointment and grief, Moses pleaded with God to appoint someone else to lead those people and happily commissioned Joshua and transferred his authority as he was asked to do by God? I reckon most people would be jealous. I think most people would feel bitter and resentful. But we don't see that from Moses. I want to tell you that the reason why at that moment in his life Moses was asking and begging with God to plead for somebody to take those people forward into that glorious inheritance that God had promised is because over years he had intentionally developed a relationship with Joshua and been a person who influenced the guy whom he was to commission. The man that God chose to be his successor, he'd already invested in. He'd imparted wisdom. He'd influenced him intentionally. He'd taken him with him at significant and strategic moments along his faith journey as a leader. And because of that, when the time came that God gave him the news, I'm sorry, it's not to be you. He'd done everything necessary to prepare Joshua for the leadership journey that lay ahead. And so instead of, you know, just saying, okay, God, I know it's not me, and now I don't want it to be anybody, he says, I can't have these people that I've invested my whole life into being like sheep without a shepherd. I can't see that. I need somebody to lead them. God, would you provide someone? And God went, of course, I'm going to provide the person that you have chosen to influence beyond any other over the years that you have been walking with me. Isn't that just like God? You see, the first thing I want to say is that influence requires investment and it requires intention. And if you want to be an influencer and if you want to create culture by influencing another person's life, you cannot hold them at arm's length. Moses was intentional in mentoring, in raising up and releasing someone else into the call of God over their life. So what can we learn from this beautiful relationship between Moses and Joshua that we read about in Exodus and in Numbers? How did what happened in the years leading up to this moment at the end of Moses' life come about into one where he stepped aside and so powerfully released another person to step up? You see, the first hallmark of influence is recognition and release. It's interesting that the first mention we have of Joshua in Exodus is in Exodus chapter 17, reading from verse 8 to 16. And it says this: while the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek attacked them. Moses commanded Joshua, choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek for us. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill holding the staff of God in my hand. So Joshua did what Moses had commanded and fought the army of Amalek. That battle is one that we often remember because we know that as Moses grew weary, there were two guys who came and helped to lift his arms up. And that's often what we remember that battle for. But for me, it's really interesting for another reason. You see, it illustrates the fact that Moses recognized something on Joshua's life. And he recognized that it was something that he didn't have. A warrior was needed to go out and fight. And it's interesting that Moses knew, that's not me. I need to be standing on the top of a mountain and praying and interceding and standing in the gap. He knew that that's how he was wired. But he then saw, this guy's a warrior. This guy is going to be great at leading my people into victory. And so he commissioned Joshua in that moment, and it's the first time that we heard about him, and off he goes and helps to win the battle. What does it tell us? It tells us, first of all, that Moses recognized that there was a different call on the life of Joshua. And it tells us, secondly, that he released Joshua into that call by giving him opportunity and position within his army. To influence another person, we simply need to recognize that there's a call over their lives. And it may not look like the call that's over our life. Not everyone that I influence is going to be called to speak or sing. But it doesn't mean they're not worth investing in, and it doesn't mean that there isn't something within them that can be recognized and identified. So question, who are you looking to influence right now in your sphere of influence? Can you see the call of God on someone else's life, even if they can't? Is there someone right now that you could give a helping hand on their way to grow and develop in their character or in their behavior? The only way that we can raise up influencers in our generation is to recognize their potential, to give them opportunity, and to let them step up and have a go. When I think about Rick Murrell, I am so thankful for the many, many, many times he did this personally for me and for so many others in this room. I remember when we were asked by Rick and Bev to take on the worship team, and we'd only been in the church for a year. And we'd just been going along on a Thursday night. We hadn't particularly been, you know, carrying any major responsibility. But Rick identified something within us. He recognized that there was a call to ministry and a call to leadership over our lives, even before we probably recognized that in ourselves. And then he released and gave us opportunity to step into that. And I remember those early days as Rick and Bev would mentor us for a long stretch of time. We were asked, we want you to focus on high praise, not intimate worship. And I remember at the time, there were moments where it felt like being in this straitjacket because we just wanted to get into that more intimate place with Jesus. But during those years of honoring and listening and learning from the wisdom of those guys, what we learned was they were absolutely right, because there's something about high praise that comes in the opposite spirit to how we often want to be when we're in church. You know, we look around at our surrounding area and we're cloaked with depression. We're cloaked with despair. And there's something about declaring who God is in that triumphant, victorious way that cuts against our culture. They taught us in those early days of giving us opportunity how to fight battles in the spirit. They gave us opportunity to stretch and develop. And that's exactly what Moses was doing as an influencer, as a kingdom influencer. He saw in Joshua this incredible, gifted, able warrior. And he thought, right, so now you go. And I'll pray and I'll stand at the top of the hill and I'm going to intercede for my people. But you're going to be on the guy on the ground learning to fight and learning to lead others. Isn't that awesome? Hallmark number two is practicing the presence of God. You see, a massive part of this incredible relationship between Moses and Joshua was the way in which Moses imparted to Joshua the key to his own success in life and in leadership, which was time spent in the presence of God. In Exodus 24, verses 12 to 18, we read that Moses took Joshua up the mountain with him when he went for a significant God encounter. And it was encounters such as this that would define Joshua and his leadership. Further on, we can see that Moses' love for the presence of God not only rubbed off on Joshua, but that he actually became prepared to go deeper, to stay longer, and to go further into the presence of God than his mentor. Let's take a look at Exodus 33, verse 11. It says this. Oh, yay! We're back on. So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend. Wow. Let's just pause there a moment. Can you imagine that? The Lord spoke with Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend. Moses enjoyed this incredible intimacy with God, this friendship with God that was so vital to him. Afterwards, it says, Moses would return to camp, but the young man who assisted him, Joshua, son of Nun, stayed behind in the tent of meeting. I love this. This is so exciting to me for a number of reasons. You see, when we think about being an influencer or a mentor to somebody, we think that we have to give them all our knowledge or all our skills and help them to do what we do. But no, it's not about that. That may be a tiny element of it. But the most important thing that we can deposit as a seed of influence into another person's life is intimacy in the presence of God, is developing a vital, incredible friendship and relationship with God. And Moses did this par excellence. He'd done it so well that when he'd had enough of spending time face to face with his friend, God, the assistant that he'd been training up went, I'm not done. I'm loving this. I've just got to stay in the tent of meeting and hang out with God some more, because I just know that this is vital for me. This is my lifeblood. Church, that's the sign of being an influencer. Who could you lead deeper into a friendship with Jesus? Who could you model the presence of God to? Could you teach someone how to worship, how to soak in his presence? It doesn't have to be on a Sunday morning. Could you teach someone how to unlock the word of God so they hear him speaking? Could you teach someone how to pray and hear God for themselves and start to operate in the prophetic so that they're able to bring that word of God to others? You see, Moses knew that the only reason he'd been able to lead the people out of Egypt was utter dependence on the presence of a miraculous and powerful God. He knew that there's no way he could ever have parted that sea himself it was entirely impossible. But he'd seen God do incredible things, and he modeled the presence of God, and he taught practicing the presence of God to Joshua. I'll never forget one Sunday morning, long time ago now, when Sam Parker, you're here today, sorry to mention you without asking you, but we'd been just spending some time investing into Sam and others in the worship team, and I'll never forget the first time that Sam came up to lead worship on a Sunday morning. And we always talk to our worship leaders about leaving space, about, you know, not just dashing always from song to song. But the first time you lead and you're standing in front of all of you guys, I know you think that you look very joyful and exciting, but occasionally, as Rick Murrell would say, you park your face in a slightly, you know, grumpier position, and it's quite scary, okay? Just telling you. I can say that. And so Sam's up here and he's leading worship and we've talked about leaving space. And I watched him. I mean, he didn't just leave space. He took the most incredible faith risks in the way that he left space. And he left space actually almost to a point where I'm feeling uncomfortable for him. And then Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, "You see, that's what it looks like to be an influencer. Because we may have a ceiling, but our ceiling becomes the next generation's floor." And where we had spent years pushing through and leading the church to a place to become comfortable with the prophetic, to become comfortable with not just singing words on a screen, and we'd taught you guys just to come on this journey, this guy gets up and that's his normal. It's totally his normal. He didn't think about it. He didn't have to try to push anything through. It's like, this is how I've lived. This is what I've seen at worship team. This is where I understand we're going. He had none of the hang-ups of thinking, oh, years ago, you know, we were a bit resistant to this. Our ceiling was his floor. Isn't that awesome? So that's the thing. You see, when we're practicing the presence of God, we need to allow our ceiling to become somebody else's floor. We need to take people as far as we can possibly go and then let them make that their floor and watch them go further and deeper into the presence of God than even we have been. And I think it's interesting that actually Moses and Joshua both had a sandals off and a holy ground encounter. Did you know that? We always think about Moses having that, but actually they both did. And that tells me that Joshua was an incredible product of Moses' influence. God met with him in a similar way and in different ways. The third hallmark of being an influencer is being faith-filled. You see, the next thing we see through this relational dynamic between Moses and Joshua is that Joshua learned through Moses that with God, all things are possible. Moses taught him how to have faith. How do I know this? Well, when 10 spies were sent out to spy out the promised land, only 2 came back with a faith-filled report. One was Caleb, and one was... Oh, you're there. Yes, one was Joshua. You see, while all the other men were afraid of the giants in the land and came back feeling like grasshoppers, somehow... Joshua had learned not to be afraid. And he comes back and goes, "It's nothing. We can surely take this." In other words, my God has got this. How did he get to that point of faith? Well, I reckon part of it was that he'd stood and seen God do incredible things and Moses take incredible faith risks as a leader over the years. He'd watched and he had been influenced by that. Who knows? But maybe he was somewhere near the front as he waited to leave a life of oppression and slavery, as he stood with the Egyptian armies coming towards him and the Red Sea in front of him, and he sees Moses having a conversation with God and saying, "Don't be afraid." Maybe at that moment he was somewhere near the front and he watched that parting and thought, "Wow, my God is incredible." He watched Moses take a life of faith risks. He'd seen the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. He'd seen victories and miracles were commonplace to him. He'd learned from the man of faith who had influenced him and invested into him. But you know, this also says something about Joshua, because there were many others who also saw how Moses led and how Moses had faith in his God. who didn't go on to respond with faith, who responded with fear. And you know, sometimes to be an influencer of others, we also have to choose to believe, even when our natural eyes don't see the evidence of God at work. To be one who sees miracles, you have to have faith. You can't be a grumbler or a complainer or allow your fear to paralyze you. Influencers are faith-filled, and Joshua learned from a great. So, questions for you, for me. Who can you model faith to? People are watching your life. How will you respond when your back is against the wall, when you can't see the way ahead and trust is required? What will you model? You see, what you model is what you will reproduce into the lives of others. Will it be faith or will it be fear? I'll never forget when we were leading a school's work ministry called Outcry. We had a number of interns, and it was our first week, and we were meeting in the little chapel, and we were learning all our songs with which we were going to go into school, and we had an issue with our PA. And I don't even really remember doing this because it's something that I learned from others and just take for granted. But as the PA system stopped working, apparently Pete and I just went and laid hands and began to pray over it and command it to work. And it did, which was awesome. I don't know if I expected it to work. But one of our interns was so struck by that. And he came and found us a couple of days later and said, "That just impacted me so much that the moment that happened, instead of getting cross or panicking or thinking we weren't going to get what we needed to get done, you guys just laid hands on it and something happened." And he said that he'd really learned in that moment what it looks like to just pray and push through a circumstance in faith. Now, believe you me, there were probably plenty of times that we didn't respond like that. So I'm not telling you that message to say, "We're amazing, look at us." I'm telling you because in the same way that he was watching us and we were unaware, there are people looking at you. They know that you say you're a Christian. They know that you talk about having faith in Jesus. And so when something happens, maybe you lose your job, or maybe your circumstances shift and financially you're up against it. Maybe a relative gets sick, or maybe you're walking through sickness yourself. In those moments, they're watching to see what a faith-filled response looks like. Now, don't get me wrong, church. A few weeks ago, I spoke about suffering, and we talked about the fact that it's okay to ask questions, it's okay to have doubts, it's okay to feel discouraged, okay? We don't have to have it all together. We need to be authentic. But to have that childlike dependence on God, even though we don't see our circumstance shifts, it speaks volumes to others. It's one of the things that's blown me away about Bev in this season, just hearing the way that she speaks with so much faith, despite it all. And finally, the last hallmark of being an influencer is limitations and legacy. You see, the final thing we can learn from this relationship is the fact that Moses didn't simply expect Joshua to be a carbon copy of him. There were character traits and faith attributes that Joshua imitated, but Moses saw the uniqueness in Joshua. He encouraged it. He developed it. He didn't feel threatened by it. You see, Moses wasn't a military man, as we heard earlier, but he saw that Joshua was, and he chose to nurture and invest in that, despite the fact that it wasn't his own personal preference. He didn't place limitations over Joshua's leadership, but he also recognized his own limitations, and he staffed them. That's a great sign of influence. If you can understand that I'm not called to be everything, I can actually find someone else who may do that thing better than I do. Administration is a definite case in point for me, and I'm really blessed that people like Yasmin Adugba and Vicky Parr just pick up the slack and do what they excel at. You see, the reason this is key is because it was precisely that warrior edge in Joshua that was going to be needed when Joshua took over from Moses. And Moses didn't know Joshua was going to be the one. He found out at the same time that we talked about earlier, at the end of his life. Moses' role had been to be a voice, to speak out against the injustice of Pharaoh and to lead the people out of Egypt and to lead them through the wilderness. But Joshua's role would be to take them into the promised land. And although that sounds amazing, the truth was that they had to fight to inhabit every single part of that land. There were battles ahead, and Moses was not the right man for the job. But fortunately, he had spent his life investing into somebody who was the right man for the job, who had the necessary skills, but not only that, had had the relevant investment that when his time came, he didn't run away in the opposite direction like Moses almost had, who said, cool, count me in, I'm on. Commission me, let me do it. Joshua went on to be one of the most successful leaders in the Old Testament. He did what Moses could never do. He led the people into the promised land, and he realized a dream that sadly Moses would never realize. And church, I want to land on this. When we want to raise an influencer and use our own influence to release another person, we need to know that in kingdom terms, it's like passing the baton in a relay race. We may never get to see the thing we dreamed of in our lifetime. We may not see the fullness of everything God spoke to us. But if we raise just one other person to live out to the full the purposes of God in their lifetime, it may just be that those things that God showed us will come to pass in and through them. And I don't know about you, but that is the legacy that I want to leave. You see, that's the legacy that today we find has been left to us. Paul Jevons has left us a legacy. That man spent countless hours counseling and spending time with the One. He wasn't a man on platforms generally. He was just quietly getting on with the business of influencing and caring for other people. Pauline Dale, she was that kind of a woman. You didn't see her on the platform, but I tell you what, most of us will remember the warm greeting we had as we walked through the church and she was doing welcome with her immaculate turned out coordinated nails and appearance. She was an influencer. And she's left us a legacy. Rick Murrell, what a kingdom legacy. You see, he may not have seen everything that he saw in the Spirit come to pass in and through his own leadership. But the great news is this, that there are so many of us that he touched and that he influenced and that he invested himself into, that you can be sure that those things are going to come to pass, because there's a whole generation of people that are armed and dangerous and full of the power and presence of God because of who he was and because of the choices that he made. But you see, church, can I have whoever was playing keyboard up, please? We are poised, and the baton is here. But it's down to you, and it's down to me, to decide whether we want to be a kingdom influencer ourselves. And I'm going to tell you this, we as a leadership are dreaming to see an unprecedented number of salvations. 12 people got saved last week. Isn't that amazing? That's so cool. But we know there's more. And I want to tell you this. It won't happen because I stand here on a platform and speak. It won't happen because the worship is awesome. It won't happen because we all have a great time in church on Sunday, although that may help sow some seeds. The way that we will influence our generation is by finding the One and giving everything that he gives to us into them, and choosing to leave a legacy that will outlive us. So I'm asking you this morning, will you, like Joshua, be commissioned for the season that lies ahead? Will you this morning respond to the call of God that is within you and say, okay, God, I want to be a kingdom influencer. And I don't think that that looks like all of those other things that we associate with great famous people. No. True kingdom influence is simply to love others as Jesus has loved us. And everyone in this room can love someone with the love of Jesus. So I'm unashamedly going to do an altar call this morning. And there is such a strong sense in my spirit that it's time for us to not only acknowledge and recognize the incredible legacy that we've been left by these amazing men and women of God that are our forerunners, and there's many more that I haven't mentioned today. It's not enough just to recognize it. There is a response that's required from us to say, that's how I want to live my life. And I believe that God is calling some of us to find a new measure of selflessness in the way that we invest into the kingdom. And it is going to cost you, I can't lie, to live your life like that. It's one series of costly decisions after another. But we owe it to our generation to create a culture of influence that rivals those people that we know influence them in the wrong way. So will you pick up that baton and be an influencer? Could we stand? The prayer team are going to come forward, and this is how we're going to do this morning. I'm going to ask all of the prayer team plus any members of our leadership team this morning to just come to the front at the moment. And we've got some oil. And what we want to do is we want to personally commission you today to be an influencer for Jesus in the way that we've described. And now I'm just going to invite you. If today you're in, I want to do this. I want to be an influencer. I just want to invite you forward just to receive a brief commissioning. It's not going to be a long prayer. It's not going to be a whole load of prophetic words. But I believe that Holy Spirit wants to transfer something significant into us as a church today. So let's do that now. Let's respond to Him.